steady outline of the Constitution, fundamental law of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Introduction. A constitution is the highest law of a country. It is the basic framework upon which all other laws are made. It is the highest law, and no other laws or regulations can be in conflict with it. It tells about the basic organization of the government, which affects all parts of life, political, economic, and social. This constitution was adopted October 7, 1977. There have been several constitutions before it. It is the summary of the experience of the Soviet people in governing themselves and in building a socialist state working toward communism, beginning with the October 1917 revolution. It is the fruit of 60 years of the development of the Soviet state. It speaks not only to the form and structure of their own government, but also to their goals, ambitions, and dreams for the progress of all of mankind along the path of Marxism and Leninism. This constitution is divided into 21 chapters. Each chapter sets forth a particular aspect of the Soviet system. We shall study the chapters one at a time. These chapters are fitted into 9 basic sections, which are in turn divided into 1 or more chapters, which are in turn divided into a total of 172 articles. So the Constitution has 9 sections, 21 chapters, and 172 articles. Lesson 1. Section 1. Principles of the Social Structure and Policy of the USSR. Chapter 1. The Political System. This chapter outlines the basic political structure of the state, that is, the basis of political power and the ways in which that power is used and how decisions are made. Article 1. The USSR is a socialist state. That is, it expresses the will of the whole people, including workers, peasants, and intellectuals of all of the nations and the nationalities of the country. The Soviet Union is a federation of a number of different states, as is the United States, in which there is a central government and local governments. The reference to nations and nationalities refers to member states or Soviets and the peoples who live in them. For example, the Armenian Soviet Socialist Republic, in which many people of Armenian ancestry live. We will learn more about this in chapters 8, 9, and 10. Article 2. All of the power in the USSR belongs to the people. This is the fundamental concept of a socialist state. Not kings nor capitalists, but the people control their own destiny. The people exercise state power, that is, power normally exercised by governments, through Soviets of people's deputies. A Soviet is like an assembly or parliament of persons elected by the people to govern. These Soviets constitute the political foundation of the USSR. All other state bodies, that is, organs of government, are under control of and accountable to the Soviets of the people's deputies. This clause ensures the basic democracy of the system and keeps the basic power in the hands of the people. Article 3. The Soviet state is organized and functions on the principle of democratic centralism. In this principle, all bodies of state authority are made up of people elected to those bodies. Each of those bodies of government authority is accountable to the people, and each lower body must abide by the decisions of higher bodies. This system combines central leadership with local initiative and creative activity. It places direct responsibility on each state body and official for the work entrusted to them. Article 4. Every part of government functions on the basis of socialist law. This means that people who are entrusted with power by the people cannot use it just any way they want, but that they must use it according to the law. This ensures the maintenance of law and order and safeguards the interests of society and the rights and freedoms of citizens. All state organizations, meaning organizations of the government, public organizations such as cooperatives and trade unions, and officials shall observe Constitution of the USSR and social laws. Article 5. Major matters of state, meaning very important decisions that would affect all of the people, shall be submitted to nationwide discussion and put to a popular vote, a referendum. Article 6. The Communist Party of the Soviet Union is the leading and guiding force of Soviet society. It exists for the people and serves the people. The CPSU, on the basis of Marxism-Leninism, determines the points of view from which the society is to develop and the basic elements of domestic and foreign policy. It directs the work of the Soviet people in a planned and systematic way and provides the theoretical basis for the development of communism. The party must function within the framework of the Constitution. This means it is subject to the will of the people. Article 7. All public organizations, such as the All-Union Leninist Young Communist League, cooperatives, trade unions, and other public organizations participate, according to their own rules, in managing the state and public affairs and in deciding political, economic, and social and cultural matters. This is different from the United States, where trade unions have no political power and are just tools of the capitalist. Article 8. Work collectives, which are described as the total population of a production unit such as a factory, take part in discussing and deciding state and public affairs, in planning production and social development, in training and placing personnel, and in discussing and deciding matters pertaining to the management of enterprises and institutions, the improving of working and living conditions, and the use of funds allocated both for developing production and for social and cultural purposes and financial incentives. Work collectives promote the socialist example, teach progressive methods of work, strengthen social production discipline, educate their members in the spirit of communist morality, and strive to enhance their political consciousness and raise their cultural level and skills and qualifications. Article 9. The principal direction in the development of the political system of Soviet society is the extension of socialist democracy, namely ever broader participation of citizens in managing the affairs of society and the state, continuous improvement of the working of the government, increasing the activities of public organizations, strengthening of the system of people's control, unifying the functions of state and public life, making the government and the society one and the same, greater openness and publicity, and constant responsiveness to public opinion. This is the end of Lesson 1, The Political System. Lesson 2, Chapter 2, The Economic System. Introduction. An economic system is that part of society which is concerned with the production and distribution of goods and services. It controls concepts of property, which can generally be described as ownership, with emphasis on the ownership of the means of production. The Soviet system is a socialist system where most property is public property, except for personal goods, personal savings and earned income, and personal residence, which is a private property, subject only to the control of the person who owns it. All other property is collective or public property owned by all the people and administered by government for the benefit of all the people. This chapter describes the Soviet system in general terms. Article 10. The basis of the Soviet economic system is the public ownership of the means of production. The people own it in the form of state property, collective farms, and cooperative property. It also includes the property of trade unions and other public organizations. The government protects socialist property. No one has the right to use it for personal gains or other selfish ends. Article 11. State property is the common property of the Soviet people. It is the principal form of socialist property. Land, minerals, waters, and forests are the exclusive property of the state. No public organization, like a trade union or a private person, can own them. The state owns the basic means of production in industry, construction and agriculture, transportation and communication, the banks, trade organizations and public utilities, most urban housing, and other property necessary for state purposes. Article 12. Collective farms and cooperative organizations own their means of production and the other things that they need to fulfill all of the purposes laid down by their rules. Collective farms do not own their land, but they are given the right to use it free by the state forever. The policy of the state is to encourage collective farms and cooperative property as being similar to state property. Collective farms, like all land users, are obliged to make effective and thrifty use of the land and to increase its fertility. Article 13. Earned income forms the basis of the personal property of Soviet citizens. This means that income cannot be got by investment, collecting rents, income from stocks, and so forth. That is capitalism. The principle is that all personal property must be earned by the individual by his own labor, not the labor of another. Such property includes articles of everyday use and consumption, tools required to work a small private farm, which is permitted, provided it does not exceed 1 acre, that is worked only by the owner, and that it is done in spare time after a regular job. This is done by many people who work on state farms and on collective farms. Other approved personal property is that of a house or earned savings. The state provides assistance to people who farm small parcels, which they refer to as small holdings. Property owned or used by citizens may not be used to derive unearned income or be employed to the detriment of society. For example, one may have money in a savings account, but it is against the law to lend it to a friend or neighbor at interest because the interest would be unearned income. Article 14. The labor of the Soviet people, free of exploitation, that is, capitalists raking off a profit, is the source of the growth of social wealth and well-being of the Soviet people. The state controls the amount of labor required and the amount of consumption allowed, given there in terms of money or wages, in accordance with the principle of socialism, from each according to his ability, to each according to his work. It fixes the rate of taxation on taxable income. Socially useful work and its results determine a person's status in society. The state helps to meet the needs of all citizens by combining material and moral incentives, usually in the form of bonuses and education to duty, and encouraging creativity and new methods of work. Article 15. The supreme goal of social production under socialism is to fulfill the needs of people to the highest extent in all aspects of life, including the material, cultural, and intellectual spheres. The state, the government, that is, ensures the growth of the productivity of labor, which raises production efficiency and quality in a planned manner, resulting in a higher standard of living for everyone. To do this, the state uses the socialist means of education, by example, technological progress, and reliance on the creativity and initiative of the working people. Article 16. The economy of the USSR is a whole made up of several parts, including social production, meaning not for private gain, distribution and exchange, all done on Soviet territory. The economy is managed on the basis of state plans for economic and social development, giving a fair share to each sector of the economy and to each geographic part of the country. It combines central direction with managerial independence and the initiative of individual and groups of enterprises. Use is made of management, accounting, profit, cost, and other economic levers and incentives. Article 17. The law permits individual labor for private gain in handicrafts, farming, on small holdings only. The provisions of services for the public and other forms of activity based exclusively on the personal work of individual citizens and members of their families, so long as such work serves the interest of society. For example, a person may earn a living as a writer, but not as a writer of capitalist propaganda. Article 18. The USSR takes all necessary steps to ensure the rational use of the land and its mineral and water resources, and the plant and animal kingdom, to preserve the purity of air and water, ensure reproduction of natural wealth, and improve the human environment. This is the end of Lesson 2, The Economic System. Lesson 3, Chapter 3, Social Development and Culture. Article 19. The social basis of the USSR is the unbreakable alliance of the workers, peasants, and intelligentsia. It is the policy of government to promote the uniformity of society by the elimination of differences between economic classes, between city and country dwellers, and between mental and physical labor. It is the policy of the government to promote the development and drawing together of all the nations and the nationalities of the USSR. Article 20. In accordance with the communist ideal, the free development of each is the condition of the free development of all. It is the policy to give citizens more and more real opportunities to apply their creative energies, abilities, and talents, and to develop their personalities in every way. It is Article 21. It is the policy of government to improve working conditions, increase safety and labor protection, and the scientific organization of the work, to the purpose of reducing and finally eliminating all hard physical labor by the use of mechanization and automation of production processes. Article 22. A program is being constantly implemented in the USSR to convert agricultural work into a variety of industrial work by mechanizing agriculture, to extend the network of educational, cultural, and medical institutions, of stores, catering, and public utility services into all rural areas, so as to transform hamlets and villages into well-planned and well-appointed modern settlements. Article 23. The state pursues a steady policy of raising people's pay levels and real incomes through increase in productivity. In order to satisfy the needs of the Soviet people more fully, social consumption funds are created. Public consumption funds consist of that part of the national income of the USSR which members of society receive in the form of free material benefits and services, free education and refresher courses, pensions, all kinds of grants, allowances for students, paid leaves, free or reduced rate passes to sanatoriums and holiday homes, and free accommodations for children in kindergartens and nurseries. By means of the public consumption funds, the state pays two-thirds of all expenses in the maintenance of apartment houses, libraries, clubs, etc. In 1975, these funds accounted for almost 25% of the national income. The public consumption funds ensure for all, without respect for their levels of income or those of their parents, equal opportunities as regards education, medical care, vocational or professional skills, social insurance, pensions, etc. This is the mechanism to maintain the level of the classless society. The state, with the broad participation of public organizations and work collectives, ensures the growth and just distribution of these funds. Article 24. Government-operated systems of health protection, retail and food stores, communal services and amenities such as culture centers and public entertainment and public utilities exist and are being expanded. The state encourages cooperatives and other public organizations to provide all types of services for the population. It encourages the development of mass physical culture and sport. Article 25. In the USSR, there is a uniform system of public education and vocational training. That is, the work skills for citizens serves the communist education and intellectual and physical development of the youth and trains them for work and social activity. In accordance with society's needs, the state provides for the planned development of science and the training of scientific personnel and organizes the introduction of the results of research in the economy and other spheres of life. This means that knowledge is not property. There can be no trade secrets or patents, but knowledge is for the use and benefit of all. Article 27. The state works to protect, improve, and increase and extend the use of society's cultural wealth for the moral and cultural education of the Soviet people and for raising their cultural level. Development of professional, amateur, and folk art is encouraged in every way. This ends Lesson 3, Social Development and Culture. This lesson will include Chapters 4 and 5. Lesson 4, Chapter 4, Foreign Policy. Article 28. The USSR steadfastly pursues a Leninist policy of peace and stands for strengthening of the security of nations and broad international cooperation. The foreign policy of the USSR is aimed at ensuring international conditions favorable to building communism in the USSR, safeguarding the state interests of the Soviet Union, such as freedom of the seas, free communications, friendly neighbors, and the like, consolidating the position of world socialism, supporting the struggle of peoples for national liberation and social progress, preventing wars of aggression, achieving universal and complete disarmament, and consistently implementing the principle of the peaceful coexistence of states with different social systems. That is, the doctrine that social states and capitalist states can live together in the same world. In the USSR, war propaganda is banned. That is, public activities promoting war are not permitted. Article 29. The USSR's relations with other states are based on the following principles. Sovereign equality. The equality of all nations, regardless of size or strength, to determine their own destinies. Mutual renunciation of the use or threat of force. Permanence and stability of border lines against one country taking any of the territory of another. Peaceful settlement of disputes. Keeping out of the internal affairs of other nations. Respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms of individuals. Equal rights of peoples and their rights to decide their own destiny. Cooperation among states and fulfillment in good faith of duties arising from international law and from the international treaties signed by the USSR. Article 30. The USSR, as a part of the world socialist community, promotes and strengthens friendship, cooperation, and mutual assistance with other socialist countries on the basis of principle of socialist internationalism, and takes an active part in socialist integration, meaning the building of complementary rather than competing economies in the social world, socialist world, so that they can trade for mutual benefit, and the social international division of labor, meaning specialization of the economics of different countries in particular kinds of work, and then sharing the products of that work. Chapter 5, Defense of the Socialist Motherland. Article 31. Defense is one of the most important functions of the state and is the concern of the whole people. To defend the country, the USSR maintains armed forces and universal military service. The duty of the armed forces of the USSR to the people is to provide reliable defense of the socialist motherland and to be in constant combat readiness, guaranteeing that any aggressor is instantly repulsed. Article 32. The state secures the security and defense capability of the country and supplies the armed forces of the USSR with everything necessary for that purpose. The duties of all parts of the state to support the defense and security are defined by law. This ends Lesson 4, Chapters 4 and 5. We have now completed the study of Part 1 of the Constitution, which sets out the principles of the social structure and policy of the USSR. We studied the political system, Lesson 1, the economic system, Lesson 2, social development and culture, Lesson 3, and foreign policy and defense, Lesson 4. We are now beginning the study of Part 2, which sets out the relations between the state and the individual. Part 2 will be divided into 3 sections. We shall begin with Section 1 of Lesson 5. Chapter 6, Citizenship of the USSR, Equality of Citizens' Rights, Article 33. Federal citizenship is uniform. No matter what nationality one comes from, all have the same rights in the USSR. Every citizen of a Union Republic is a citizen of the USSR. Law defines how one gets or gives up citizenship. Overseas, all citizens of the USSR are protected by the state. Article 34. Citizens of the USSR are equal before the law, without distinction of origin, social or property status, race or nationality, sex, education, language, attitude to religion, type and nature of occupation, domicile, or other status. The equal rights of citizens of USSR are guaranteed in all fields of economic, political, social, and cultural life. Article 35. Women and men have equal rights in the USSR. Unlike the Constitution of the U.S., which says this, the Soviet Constitution ensures it in practice. Exercise of these rights is ensured by according women equal access with men to educational and vocational and professional training, equal opportunities in employment, remuneration, and promotion, and in social and political and cultural activity, and by special labor and health protection measures for women, by providing conditions enabling mothers to work, by legal protection, and material and moral support for mothers and children, including paid leaves and other benefits for mothers and for expectant mothers, and gradual reduction of working time for mothers with small children. Article 36. Citizens of the USSR of different races and nationalities have equal rights. Exercise of these rights is ensured by a policy of all-round development and drawing together of all the nations and nationalities of the USSR, by educating citizens in the spirit of Soviet patriotism and socialist internationalism, and by the possibility to use their native languages and the languages of other peoples of the USSR. Any limitations on the rights of citizens or establishment of rights or privileges on the grounds of race or nationality, and any advocacy of racial or national exclusiveness, hostility, or contempt are punishable by law. That is a crime. Article 37. Citizens of other countries and stateless persons in the USSR are guaranteed the rights and freedoms provided by law, including the right to apply to a court and other state bodies for the protection of their personal, property, family, and other rights. Citizens of other countries and stateless persons within the USSR are obliged to respect the Constitution of the USSR and observe Soviet laws. Article 38. Asylum means the right to protection by a country, not one's own, from persecution by one's own country for political or other beliefs or activities. The USSR grants the right of asylum to foreigners persecuted for defending the interests of the working people and the cause of peace, or for participation in the revolutionary and national liberation movement, or for progressive social and political, scientific, or other creative activities. Chapter 7. The Basic Rights, Freedoms, and Duties of Citizens of the USSR. Article 39. Citizens enjoy all rights given by the Constitution and by Soviet law. The Soviet system ensures the enlargement of these rights and the continuous improvement of standards of living. Enjoyment by citizens of their rights and freedoms must not be in a way that is harmful to society or to the state or other citizens. Article 40. Citizens of the USSR have the right to work. That is, to guaranteed employment and pay in accordance with the quantity and quality of their work and not below the state-established minimum, including the right to choose their trade or profession, type of job and work in accordance with their inclinations, ability, training and education, with due account of the needs of society. This right is ensured by the socialist economic system. Steady growth of the productive forces, free vocational and professional training, improvement skills, training in new trades and professions, and development of the systems of vocational guidance and job placement. Article 41. Citizens of the USSR have the right to rest and leisure. This right is ensured by the establishment of a working week not exceeding 41 hours for workers and other employees, a shorter working day in a number of trades and industries, shorter hours for night work, by the provision of paid annual holidays, weekly days of rest, extension of the network of cultural, educational, and health-building institutions, and the development on a mass scale of sport, physical culture, and camping and tourism, by the provision of neighborhood recreational facilities, and for other opportunities for rational use of free time. The length of collective farmers working in leisure time is established by their collective farms. This ends Section 1. Our next lesson will continue with Section 2. Now we shall continue with Section 2 of Chapter 6 of the USSR Constitution. Article 42. Citizens of the USSR have the right to health protection. This right is ensured by free, qualified medical care provided by state health institutions, by extension of the network of therapeutic and health-building institutions, by the development and improvement of safety and hygiene in industry, by wide public health and sanitation measures, by improving the environment, by special child health care and the prohibition of child labor, except for one done as a part, for work done as a part of the school program, and by developing research to reduce disease and promote a long, active life. Article 43. Citizens of the USSR have the right to maintenance in old age, in sickness, and in the event of complete or partial disability or loss of the breadwinner. This right is guaranteed by social insurance of workers and other employees and collective farmers, by allowance for temporary disability, by the provision by the state or by collective farms or retirement pensions, disability pensions, and pensions for loss of the breadwinner, by providing employment for the partially disabled, by care for the elderly and the disabled, and by other forms of social security. Article 44. Citizens of the USSR have the right to housing. In the USSR, housing is not an industry, it is a service. This right is ensured by the development and upkeep of state and socially owned housing, by assistance for cooperative and individual house building, by fair distribution under public control of the housing that becomes available through fulfillment of the program of building well-appointed dwellings, and by low rents and low charges for utility services. Citizens of the USSR shall take good care of the housing allocated to them. Article 45. Citizens of the USSR have the right to education. This right is ensured by free provision of all forms of education, by the institution of universal compulsory secondary education and broad development of vocational, specialized secondary, and higher education, in which instruction is oriented toward practical activity and production. By the development of extramural correspondence and evening courses, by the provision of state scholarships and grants and privileges for students, by the free issue of school textbooks, by the opportunity to attend a school where teaching is in the native language, and by the provision of facilities for self-education. Article 46. Citizens of the USSR have the right to enjoy cultural benefits. This right is ensured by broad access to the cultural treasures of their own land and of the world that are preserved in state and other public collections, for example, in museums, by the development and fair distribution of cultural and educational institutions throughout the country, for example, plays, ballet, folk dance groups, and the like, by developing television and radio broadcasting and the publishing of books, newspapers, and periodicals, and by extending the free library service, and by expanding cultural exchanges with other countries. Article 47. Citizens of the USSR, in accordance with the aims of building communism, are guaranteed freedom of scientific, technical, and artistic work. This freedom is ensured by broadening scientific research, encouraging invention and innovation, and developing literature and the arts. The state provides the necessary material conditions for this and support for voluntary societies and unions of workers in the arts, organizes introduction of inventions and innovations in production and other spheres of activity. The rights of authors, inventors, and innovators are protected by the state. Article 48. Citizens of the USSR have the right to take part in the management and administration of state and public affairs and in the discussion and adoption of laws and measures of all union and local significance. This right is ensured by the opportunity to vote and to be elected to Soviets of People's Deputies. Remember, these are like parliaments or councils of elected people's representatives and exist on all levels of government, from villages to the USSR as a whole. They have all political power as representatives of the people, and other elected state bodies to take part in nationwide discussions and referendums, in people's control, in the work of state bodies, public organizations, and local community groups, and in meetings at places of work or residence. Article 49. Every citizen of the USSR has the right to submit proposals to state bodies and public organizations for improving their activity, and to criticize shortcomings in their work. Officials are obliged, with established time limits, to examine citizens' proposals and requests, to reply to them, and to take appropriate action. Persecution for criticism is prohibited. Persons guilty of such persecution shall be called to account. This is the way that the principle of socialist criticism is put into practice in the Soviet Union. Article 50. In accordance with the interests of the people and in order to strengthen and develop the socialist system, citizens of the USSR are guaranteed freedom of speech, of the press, of assembly, meetings, and street processions and demonstrations. Exercise of these political freedom is ensured by putting public buildings, streets, and squares at the disposal of the working people and their organizations, by broad dissemination of information, and by the opportunity to use the press, television, and radio. Tomorrow we shall continue with Chapter 6.